He comes then to the problem of the tragic and comic emotions. These are the emotions that must be evoked and called to you. Turning now to Aristotle, we find that the tragic emotions are pity and terror. The comic emotion is joy. Now, pity and terror. Stephen, this arrogant youth, says, Aristotle has not defined them, I have. The definitions are as follows. Pity is that emotion which arrests the mind before whatsoever is grave and constant in human suffering. The emotion that arrests the mind before whatsoever is grave and constant in human suffering and unites it, that's the compassion thing, with the human sufferer. You are united with the human sufferer, not the sufferer who is, let us say, a Frenchman, a German, a resistor, a Negro, a Japanese, or what? The human sufferer. And if you can't show the human being through the local definition, you're not at work right. Also, grave and constant. That which cannot be changed. You are not being invited to change anything. You are being invited to take, to feel compassion for what is in being and the way it is. What is terror? Terror is the emotion that arrests the mind before whatsoever is grave and constant in human suffering and unites it with the secret cause. What is the secret cause of so-and-so's death? One could take a number of dramatic deaths that have recently occurred. The death of one or another of the two Kennedy brothers, the death of Martin Luther King. These deaths can be dealt with in desire and loathing forms, in the way of didactic and propaganda, but how do you deal with them tragically? A shoots B. Well, let's take the Martin Luther King, because that's an easy one. A is a white man of a certain kind, B is a black man of a certain kind. What is the cause? Is it the hatred of white for black? Well, let's say so. What is the cause? Is it the bullet? Well, let's say so. Those aren't secret causes at all. Those are instrumental causes. Those are temporal causes. Those can be changed. Well, what is the grave and constant thing there? So that this becomes a revelation of the preconditions and actualities of all life everywhere. Well, look for it. Bring it out. With affirmation. Not with the sense that this should not have been, but with the sense of the glory of this. At the same time with the sympathy for the human sufferer. So that you have this, you're getting what I'm getting? The plastic irony again. There is the terror of the cause. What is the cause? Mortality. We all must die. You can't change that. One man's death comes to him this way, another comes that way. And there's also the majesty of the destiny of the one who is the killer of the other, Jesus and Judas. They were built that way. That's the way the world works, in the way of the coming and going of the pairs of opposites. I was working before coming here on the mythologies and rites of the Mayan and Aztec Indians. And they regard the world as inevitably in duality. It shows itself in dualities. And these dualities are the wonder and marvel of the world. Now, the duality that is stressed in the Hindu tradition is the male-female duality. The duality that's stressed in the Maya Aztec tradition is the duality of contending antagonists. And their thesis is, what brings the opposites together is battle. That is the creative medium of all life, according to this view. And battle gives you a marvelous image of the inevitability of duality and yet the transcendence of it. Because in every battle, there is loss and victory. One is the loser, the other is the winner. But the main thing is that coming together. This is a tragic view. It is represented with affirmation. War is called the flowery war. It is that by which life flowers. And of course, the flowering of sacrifice in that war, in that world, is absolutely horrendous. But these sacrifices were rendered as emblems, as flowers to the gods, to the goddesses, who have given of their lives for us. The whole thing is the giving of a life. And then the majesty, well, let us think of the Martin Luther King and the flowering that comes out of that, which would not have come had that not happened, is something you might wish to show. But that would be only secondary to the focal representation of the miracle of death and life and the death that comes to the one who has given himself to life all the way. The death of someone who has not given himself all the way is rather insignificant, but here is a jeweled death, so to say, and it is best rendered that way, not as propaganda, but as a flower. Well then, those are the two tragic emotions. You behold with horror, experience with horror, the secret cause which is operating in all of us now, our deaths are being born in us. And at the same time, you affirm it. This is the tragic view. You get it in the Greeks. You won't get it in other cultures so strongly. Because, for instance, in the Orient, you can't have a tragedy. When you have reincarnation, you can't have a tragic death. I'll never forget a great film, great in length, that was produced by Shankar some years ago. I forgot what the name of it was. I think it was Kalpa or something like that. And it showed the life and death of a number of people. And they would work up, you would work up toward the tragic thing, you know, and you're all excited and, gosh, I hope he doesn't die. Well, he dies. And within one frame, one movie frame, he's in another life. And that other one's wiped out. You don't even have a moment to absorb what's happened because we are, in the Orient, the hero is not the individual.